Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Factor. If you want to eat better this year and are looking for fast, healthy, restaurant-quality meals that are ready to eat and easy on your budget, Factor is the perfect solution. Sign and save right now by going to factormeals.com/TalkTV50 and use code TALKTV50 to get 50% off your order. That's code TALKTV50 at factormeals.com/TalkTV50 to get 50% off.
Hi, this is Barbara Feldon, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson welcoming you back to TV Confidential Radio talk show about television that will make you want to say, I woke up this morning feeling fine, as we welcome our next guest, Mr. Harvey Lisberg. Harvey Lisberg, the legendary music manager who not only shaped the careers of such iconic artists as Herman's Hermits, 10cc, and Tony Christie, but paved the way for Neil Sedaka's comeback as a songwriter and recording artist in the mid-1970s, and was one of the very first people in the music industry to recognize the talent and potential of the songwriting duo of Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber. Those are just a few of the many, many stories that Harvey shares in his new book, which is also called I'm Into Something Good. It's a captivating journey through the golden era of music that we'll tell you more about in just a second. Harvey Lisberg, welcome to TV Confidential.
Thank you. Looking forward to doing the interview, Ed.
As it happens, within a few weeks of talking to you, I happened to talk to one of your contemporaries in the music industry, Simon Napier Bell. And he described the work of a manager as sort of like the bodyguard of the work of the group. And that's an interesting way of looking at it. How did you approach music management, and what first made you want to get into music management?
I used to write songs. I was a sort of, I played the guitar and piano, and I wrote songs with a few people, and I wanted to get those songs to various artists, and the songs weren't that great, but at the time I thought they were, and nobody would do them, so I decided the way around is to get my own band, and I went to the Manchester Evening News. I got them to arrange a competition for best band sort of thing, and then I went to Church Hall and Davy Hume to see a band, and after every number, the stage was charged, and people were screaming, kids were screaming, and I thought, wow, this is it. I won the National Lottery. This is it. This is the next Beatles. Watch out, Brian Epstein. So anyhow, I went to the stage, and it was Herman and the Hermits, as they were called then.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to Peter, I'd like to manage you, and he asked me to go back to his house. Got back to his house, and I started fiddling on a piano in his house, and he said, would you like to join the band? I said, absolutely not. I want to manage the band, and I want you to do my music. Anyhow, that's how it started. That was pretty lucky that it was her tell me that he planted in the audience lots of friends telling them there was an American manager or something coming, and would they scream a lot? So they all screamed, and the whole thing was a sort of setup. It was a two-way stretch. I thought the world had come to my hands, and they thought they're getting a manager by falsely screaming and everything. That was the way it was. Peter's a lovely guy, and although it's a very brief summary, that's what really happened in short.
And this is parenthetical, this is apropos of nothing. I briefly had an opportunity to meet Peter about 20 years ago. He and I happened to be guests on the same radio show on the same morning. He was the 10 o'clock guest, I was the 11 o'clock guest. And as he was, I was entering the studio as he was exiting the studio. And of course, I recognized who he was. And even though he wanted to get out of there, he spent about a minute or two just chatting with me. And that's what makes Peter Noon, Peter Noon.
Yeah, he was, of course, a child star. He'd been on Coronation Street in England as Len Fairclough's son. And I'm not sure if the viewers in Canada or listeners have heard of Coronation Street, but anyhow, any of them that have been to England will know about it. So he had a bit of experience. He was very, very good. He had a terrific personality. He was very good-looking, cute. The boy next door image, and he was actually really quite perfect. And my next job as manager, if you want me to answer Simon Napier's question, which was, what is the function of a manager? I would say I was in charge of every single thing. I was like the puppet master.
Mm-hmm.
I was very green, not knowing anything about the music business. Well, in my defense, neither had Brian Epstein when he started with the Beatles. But so everything was new to me, and it was new to the band. I mean, once I got the band, I got them a tremendous amount of work. You know, they were working every night of the week. It was, and I sort of had a good feeling about that. And all my friends were telling me they were a load of rubbish. Why don't I stay in my job, which was an accountancy job, where I was getting bored out of my mind. I couldn't stand it. I was much more interested in the musical side, and once the Beatles had happened, I thought that's the way, that is the route to go. And I was very, very involved in arranging everything, the publicity, the road work, the agents, the hotels. I did absolutely everything then, and also particularly stayed in the background. I was not a front runner. I wasn't trying to get my name up front, which I think probably other managers are much more worried about their image and being out front. I wanted to be behind the scenes and doing it all from the background.
Harvey Lisberg is on the line with us. Harvey Lisberg, legendary music manager and the mastermind behind the scenes behind such iconic artists as Herman's Hermits, 10cc, and Tony Christie. Harvey's memoir, I'm Into Something Good, My Life Managing 10cc, Herman's Hermits, and many more, is a rollicking, frank, and often moving look at his 60-plus year career in music that, among other things, reveals the excesses of life on the road with Herman's Hermits, the frustration of being the champion behind then-unknown Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber, the highs and lows of managing 10cc, and a whole lot more. I'm Into Something Good, available wherever books are sold through omnibuspress.com as well as amazon.com. You're a very shrewd man, Harvey. One of the many shrewd moves you did was when I'm Into Something Good, the single, was first released. This is going back to you originally wanted to leave your mark in music as a songwriter, and you did write a few songs, one of which was the B-side of I'm Into Something Good. I thought that was well done.
Yeah, well, that was nice of the band. I think the band appreciated all the work that I'd done for them and the full date sheet and the evolution of how it got into the current lineup. And we were very friendly and everything, and they had to have a number, and they did that number. My father, who was very musical, he was a first violinist at Manchester Grammar School, and also when he was in the army, actually in the British army and in the American, going into Italy with the American forces, he actually was in a band there. He said to me, "Well, you know, are you sure about these songs? They're not really good." And then I showed him the check for the first royalty check, because in those days, even in these days, the mechanicals are split. It was a single, so I shared the mechanicals with Goffin and Carol King, Goffin, myself, and my partner Charlie Silverman, which was ridiculous when you think about it. And he had a Well, maybe I was wrong about the songs. I tell you what, you were right. They weren't that good, but it brought us our home, and we moved into a lovely home as a result of the income.
And it proved that the chance you took leaving a stable job as an accountant paid off.
Yeah, but I was never going to stay in that job. In my opinion, I wanted to be a stockbroker. I was always interested in stocks and shares and easy money. I don't know, it was a fault of mine. I always wanted to make money quickly, mm-hmm. and it was good or bad. But that was my aim in life, and I was going to be a stockbroker, and the accountancy killed me. I went to university, so I avoided 3 of the 5 years of drudgery. Anyhow, the one good thing about the accountancy thing, I went with a firm that actually did the accounts of the Grade Organisation, which was the biggest agency, theatrical agency in England. They mm-hmm. control the Palladium, Talk of the Town. I'm one of the biggest actors. Leslie Grade, Lou Grade, and Bernard Delphon were brothers, and they ruled everything. So we were the Manchester office. They were obviously taken care of by the London office. It's a firm called Bender Hamlin. Mm-hmm. And it was really kind of them. They allowed me to go to TV shows or whatever it was. They were very accommodating to me because of their knowledge of the showbiz, and they really were very keen on it. And I have to thank them. So although it was very boring and I got fed up, they were very decent about it.
Did you say Lou Grade?
Yes, Lou Grade, Leslie Grade, and Bernard Delphont were 3 brothers, and they had London management, which controlled Talk of the Town, the Palladium, and they had every act in the world. And my favourite story of the Grade Organisation is they went to this, they had one of their acts on at the Palladium, and at the interval they went backstage and said, we've got to sign you, you're fantastic. And the guy said, I can't. Said, what do you mean you can't? Said, I'm already signed. Well, who are you signed to? I said, I'm signed to you.
Well, the name Lou Grade jumped out to me because as some... especially if you're a fan of the great British shows that came out in the 60s and 70s,
he was in charge of ITV.
Yes.
And his claim to fame in the movies is he did the first version of the Titanic. He came out with a fantastic quote, it would have been cheaper to lower the Atlantic. They lost so much money on that film. And the irony was, like what happened with me with Tony Christie and Amarillo, like X years later, it wins 12 Oscars and is the biggest film of the year.
Absolutely. Harvey Lisberg is on the line with us. Harvey Lisberg, legendary music manager. Harvey's memoir, I'm Into Something Good, My Life Managing 10cc, Herman's Hermits, many more, available wherever books are sold through Omnipress.com as well as Amazon.com.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
One more item if you want to eat better this year. Our friends at Factor are the perfect solution. They have more than 35 fresh, pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto meals that are restaurant quality, ready to heat, and ready to eat with no prepping, no cooking, and no cleanup necessary. Check it out yourself by going to factormeals.com/talktv50, factormeals.com/talktv50. Astrid and I recently checked out some of Factor's keto selections, including their roasted tomato and feta cavatappi with broccoli and red peppers, and the garlic and herb-roasted mushrooms, while their 3-bean chili with quinoa is just the right size for lunch. We also enjoyed their chocolate banana smoothies, which is just one of the more than 60 healthy and nutritious add-on options Factor provides that will help you fuel up and feel good all day, while best of all, Factor meals are less expensive than takeout. Sign up and save right now by going to factormeals.com/talktv50. Use promo code TALKTV50 to get 50% off your order. That's code TALKTV50 at factormeals.com/talktv50 to get 50% off. I'm going to jump around a little bit because you mentioned Tony Christie. And this actually ties into, Sir Lou Grade and ITC. I know who Tony Christie is, because he said, I mean, one of his big hits was Avenues and Alleyways, which was a theme song to The Protectors. And when I first heard that, I thought it was Tom Jones, because he is a very...
Well, he did have a very similar voice. And when I started it's a long story, and as you know...
This is the Harvey Show. You can take as much time as you want.
No, it's not so much. It's very hard to stay on one subject. I always wanted a Tom Jones. I toured with Herman Hermits and Tom Jones in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Tom Jones. He was amazing. I mean, this is young Tom Jones. And when we were in Australia, just to give an example, I went to a 10,000-seater, like a boxing ring,
mm-hmm.
where there was Tom Jones doing a sound check. And I and Tom Jones and the sound guy were about the only people there. And Tom Jones did a full performance, belted his voice out. And I thought, oh, God, if I could only get somebody like that. And anyhow, and then I got Tony Christie, and we had a few hits. Did What I Did for Maria, Las Vegas, and then What Avenues and Alleyways, as you say. And then I was in New York at the Brill Building with a friend called Donny Kirshner, who did Midnight Special. What had happened in America was once the Beatles arrived, all the American acts were absolutely slaughtered. We never heard of them again for a while. Well, we'd been, obviously in England, we'd had American stuff drummed down our throat for 40 years. But an English person could get arrested in America, with the exception of Ronnie Donegan, who had Rock Island Lines. I don't know if an English artist had a hit in America. But once the Beatles opened the door with their lovely, energetic, local voice, humour, brilliance, they opened the door for everybody. We all walked through it, and it was just fantastic. As I say, I'm jumbling on. I've got to get back to the Bill Building, and I said to him, I said, Neil Sedaka, subsequently, because of the Beatles, has absolutely died, and dead, stone cold dead, not a murmur, nothing. And I said to Donny Kirshner, you know, I really like Neil Sedaka in the 50s, and whatever happened to him? He said, oh, he's upstairs. I said, you're joking. Yes. Would you like to meet him? And I was with my wife Carol. I said, sure, I would. I'd have to. We went upstairs, and he's in a room which is about 10 foot by 6 foot, smallest room we've ever seen. Half of it occupied by an upright piano, and there was Neil. And Donny said to him, why don't you play Harvey some of your new stuff? So I said, OK, let's listen to it. And he played four songs, which I was just didn't like at all. And then he played the fifth one, which was Is This the Way to Amarillo? I said, that's it, I'll take that, I'll have that. Can you get me a demo of that? And Donny Kirshner looked at Neil, and Neil looked at Donny Kirshner, and they didn't like it at all. I thought, I'm mad. and they just didn't like the song. They said, look, I've got this singer by Tom Jones, as you said. He's got a wonderful voice. Bloody demo. Get the demo. Get the demo. And it kept going on and on and on and on and on. And... and they never sent it. And after about 2 months of harassing them, the white label came, demo with Ice, This Way to Amarillo. I jumped in the train, got down to London, met Peter Carradine and Mitch Murray, who produced Tony Christie, and they recorded it. I think the next day, I don't know how the hell they got it arranged so quickly, they recorded it and they put it out. And it was pretty much a disaster. It only got to about 18, which I thought was ridiculous, because I thought it was number one. Anyhow, 20 years later, or 24 years later, Peter Kay, have you heard of Peter Kay, by the way?
The name rings a bell.
He's a comedian, a very brilliant comedian in England, decided to use this song on a video.
Oh, that's right. He did. That's right. He did a video, and he had different people would lip-sync.
Members of, Cliff Richard, Michael Parker, so all the huge stars were on this video. It was a terrific success. And then the record went in the charts. And this is was number one for 12 weeks. So 28 years after it originally came out, it got where it should have got. And then, of course, Neil was thrilled. And Donny Kirshner couldn't believe his ears. And that led him bringing Neil over to England to do a demo in Strawberry Studios, which we owned, and so forth.
And as we said in our open, that paved the way for Neil Sedaka's huge comeback in the 1970s, both as a songwriter And as a recording artist, he had a huge hit with Solitaire. And then within a couple of years of that, he wrote Love Will Keep Us Together for Captain and Tennille, which blew up. And none of that would have been, I dare say, none of that would have been possible, Harvey, were it not for you.
It was all done in Strawberry Studio, on Neil's albums. Those are the original, like you say, Love Will Keep Us Together. All those songs were done with 10cc as the backing. Because 10cc weren't formed, they were just four individual musicians, and Eric and Graham owned the studio, of course. But and they used it, and it was a fantastic album. And what was interesting, before every performance, Neil got round the piano and everybody sat on the floor, and he rattled off a little show for them, Calendar Girl, Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, you name it, all his hits from the 60s. And it was a little entertainment, and my job on the Sunday was to take bagels and lox for him, because he loved smoked salmon in here. So by the way, in Manchester, England, you get the best bagels and the best lox. There's no way you can forget New York.
Okay.
The place. Anyhow, it backfired on me. Instead of getting a correct credit on the album, I didn't even get my second name, but it says credits, Harvey, bagels and lox.
I'm Into Something Good, My Life Managing 10cc, Herman's Hermits, and many more by our guest, Harvey Lisberg, available wherever books are sold, omnibuspress.com, as well as amazon.com. We'll talk some more with Harvey after this quick timeout here on TV Confidential. Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/tvconfidential, x.com/tvconfidential, or @tvconfidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.